here. Shane asked me if I could introduce Haley, because he is up somewhere remote where he doesn't have a very good connection. I guess since he's been promoted to president now, is that right, Michelle? He's now our president, and I am
Yes.
our what, president-elect. We've all
Yes.
moved up very unceremoniously given the present situation. We are so happy to have Haley Black here to talk to us about workers' compensation issues. And she was doing insurance defense at Smith and Glauser and then Kip and Christian, primarily in construction litigation, representing developers and subcontractors, and also working in defense of personal injury suits involving construction accidents before she left to become an in-house attorney at Workers' Compensation Fund, where she's now been for 2 years. And she represents employers at the Utah Labor Commission as well as at the district court. I hope I have that right, Haley. Please correct me if I'm not, but we are so grateful to have you here. And I know that people have a lot of questions about workers' compensation issues, especially pandemic type of issues and COVID-19. So thank you for being here, and we're all excited to hear what you have to teach us.
Great, thank you. I am hoping that there's a chat option, Michelle. I don't know for sure. I can't see it on my screen right now, but if people have questions or comments, I know there's a few attorneys from my office who are in attendance. Please feel free to use the chat option, and I will try to figure out if those are coming to me and to answer any questions if I can. Just a quick introduction to WCF Insurance for those of you who have not worked with us. We have a main office here in Sandy, Utah, and we also write workers' compensation insurance and have offices in California, Nevada, Idaho, Colorado, and Arizona. So our legal team works out of our Sandy office, and we have a total of 12 attorneys in our compliance and litigation sections. So I was asked to talk to you about workers' compensation claims and issues related to COVID-19. And I'm a little afraid that this presentation may raise more questions than answers. Dealing with COVID-19 has been a challenge for everyone because there's very little historical data or precedent to help us evaluate claims. But I thought it would be interesting to talk through some of the legal issues and some of the novel claim issues that have come up during this time. So obviously the most common question we're getting from policyholders and others is, are COVID-19 claims that are made by injured workers covered under a workers' compensation policy? So WCF has now received around 100 claims, about 90% of which have come from first responders. So our claims team is regularly dealing with this question. And if the answer was a simple yes or no, this presentation would be short. But there are some situations where we're likely to accept and pay COVID-19 claims, and there are other situations where it's fairly unlikely that we would do so. So in short, the answer is maybe. And when we determine whether to provide benefits under our policy, as with any other insurance coverage question, we look at the workers' compensation policy of insurance and then the applicable Utah law. I don't know how many people who are here for the CLE practice workers' compensation. I don't want this to be too tedious, but our policy has two parts. It has the workers' compensation insurance, which is primarily what we're going to talk about, and then we have employer's liability insurance. So when we look at our the part one of our policy, which is our workers' compensation insurance, in part A there on the right side, it provides that workers' compensation insurance will apply to bodily injury by accident or bodily injury by disease. So for coverage to apply, bodily injury by disease must be caused or aggravated by the conditions of employment. So the biggest question to look at when determining whether a workers' compensation policy covers COVID-19 is whether the disease was caused by conditions of employment. So there are certain jobs that involve inherent exposure to dangerous substances or conditions. So breathing in smoke is a condition of employment for a firefighter, and that can result in lung cancer. That's actually been statutorily determined to be a condition of employment here in Utah. Asbestosis is caused by breathing in asbestos fibers, which was a condition of employment for many construction trades. Silicosis is caused by inhaling silica sand, for example, while doing sandblasting. And exposure to chemicals that can poison you may be a condition of employment for some people who work in chemical labs or production lines. There are other diseases that are not so obviously caused by some kind of inherent condition of employment. So carpal tunnel, for example, is a fairly common claim that we see, and it can be caused by some kind of repetitive motion in the workplace. But there's other things like sports, hobbies, pregnancy, those types of factors that can also cause carpal tunnel. And then coverage is much more questionable with illnesses that are considered ordinary diseases of life. Some workers' compensation policies actually exclude those from coverage. Our policy does not expressly exclude ordinary diseases, but it's pretty unlikely that we would cover a claim stemming from the common flu or a cold virus, because the general public is exposed to those things and it would be very difficult to trace the cause to work. So you can probably already see some of the difficulty in assessing something like COVID-19, which is a widespread pandemic. So there's very little guidance in Utah as to coverage for common illnesses under workers' compensation policy. There is a case out of Nevada that's interesting. It's Palmer v. Del Webb's High Sierra. And that involved a claim that a casino worker suffered from lung disease due to breathing in secondhand smoke during her employment. And the Nevada Supreme Court found that environmental smoke was not incidental in character to the casino business, but was a hazard to which workers may be equally exposed outside of employment. So in the same vein, contagious diseases would seem to be a condition that is unique to very few businesses. So part one of our policy of insurance also expressly incorporates the workers' compensation law from the insured state. So in determining whether we have to cover a COVID-19 claim, we also look to the language of the Utah Workers' Compensation Act and the Utah My computer was giving me a message that I was muted. I hope I wasn't muted this whole time.
Haley, you were muted for about 10 seconds. I'm so sorry. That okay. that was my error. I was trying to add someone to the meeting and clicked the wrong thing. Keep going. You're back on.
All right, great. So the Utah Workers' Compensation Act and the Utah Occupational Disease Act have language that's somewhat similar to the language of our policy. So for any workers' compensation claim to be compensable under either act, the employee is going to have to prove that their claimed injury or their claimed disease arose out of their employment. But each of these acts has different applicable legal standards and defenses. So one of the first questions we asked at WCF was which act would govern a COVID-19 claim? And there's very limited case law, again, that deals with contagious illness as the basis of workers' compensation claims. There are also differences between Utah law and the laws of other states that makes our analysis a little bit trickier. So when I first considered this question, my gut reaction was that a COVID-19 claim should be handled under the Occupational Disease Act. But I actually polled the other attorneys in my office, and it came out about 50-50 between the attorneys who thought it should fall under the Workers' Compensation Act and those who thought it should fall under the Occupational Disease Act. So it's not as simple as saying COVID-19 is an illness and therefore it should fall under the Occupational Disease Act. So looking at the language of the actual, you'll see that there's actually not a lot of guidance from our legislature as to what type of claims are meant to fall under each of these two acts. So the Utah Workers' Compensation Act provides for payment of compensation and medical expenses where an employee suffers injury by accident arising out of and in the course of employment. The Comp Act requires the claimant to prove there was an accident, but you should know that accident is interpreted very broadly, so any usual activity would be covered as long as it results in an unexpected injury. The Comp Act also requires a claimant to prove a work accident was the medical and legal cause of injury. So if a person suffers from a pre-existing condition like arthritis that contributes to an injury like a herniated disc, they would have to show that their work involves some kind of unusual or extraordinary exertion that's different from what they would be exposed to in everyday life. Absent this type of pre-existing condition, though, the burden for a claimant under the Comp Act is pretty low. So any activity is compensable so long as the injury is unexpected, and the claimant has to show by a preponderance of evidence that the work accident was the likely cause of their injury. Apportionment is not available under the Comp Act. So if a judge finds that a person's work caused or aggravated an injury, the employer is generally going to be liable for all of the compensation and care that relates to that injury. So you can see from the language of this act how a COVID-19 claim could fit in cases where the exposure is easy to identify, such as when a first responder provides care to a COVID-19 patient, or where an employer has strict contact tracing protocols. The claimant could argue they suffered COVID-19 through an accidental exposure in the course of their employment. The claims adjuster would then look at that discrete industrial exposure and the medical evidence and make a decision about whether it's likely that the work exposure caused the illness. Accident-based decisions under the Comp Act, though, are a lot more difficult when the exposure isn't so easy to pin down. For example, as now, this illness is really widespread. So then we look at the Occupational Disease Act, which extends workers' compensation benefits to a disease or illness that arises out of and in the course of employment and is medically caused or aggravated by that employment. So the OD Act does not require proof of an accident or proof of any unusual or extraordinary exertion at work. However, the OD Act allows for apportionment and reduction of liability. So compensation payable by the employer is reduced and limited to the proportion the occupational exposure contributed to the claimant's condition in comparison to other causative factors. So WCF can reduce its liability if employment outside of the state of Utah contributes to a condition, if a condition is aggravated by a subsequent non-industrial illness, or if the person already had an illness prior to employment and their work simply aggravated or accelerated that disease. These provisions could be important with respect to severe COVID-19 cases where a person suffers from another lung or respiratory illness that compounds their condition. Most importantly, though, for our purposes is subsection 2. Which I've highlighted in red here for you. And this allows us to reduce liability where the disease is of a character to which the employee may have had substantial exposure outside of employment or to which the general public is commonly exposed. So you could see why WCF and employers and insurers would prefer to adjust COVID-19 claims as occupational diseases. Based on this language, under an occupational disease analysis, we would be able to argue that if an employee cannot prove their work exposure was greater than the exposure to the common public or the general public, the claim would not be compensable. So there is one case where the Utah Supreme Court attempted to square what kinds of claims fall under the Workers' Comp Act and which kinds of claims fall under the Occupational Disease Act. Some of you may be familiar with this. There's a very big problem with this case in that the justices were unable to reach any type of a majority opinion. So the decision is 110 pages long and includes three different opinions with no real guidance coming from this. So on one side, Justice Jimonis and Justice Lee argued that injury by accident and occupational disease are terms of art that encompass more than their ordinary meanings. So they argue that the terms must be interpreted according to Utah history and Utah precedent. And they point to the fact that there's a prior version of the OD Act that actually listed out 27 different conditions that fell under the OD Act. And those conditions included things that were not just illnesses or diseases. Things such as synovitis, which is swelling of the joints, and would be considered more of a physical injury. So they also note that the term injury has long meant something more than just physical injury. In the civil litigation context, for example, injury often includes all types of damages. So Justice Jimonis and Justice Lee argue that the primary distinction between the two acts is unexpectedness. So an injury by accident is an injury that is the unexpected result of one's work. But on the other hand, an occupational disease would be a condition that would be expected to result because of the nature of one's work. Justice Jimonis also added in a second element, which is definiteness of time. He states that an injury by accident could be pinned down to having occurred on a specific day and time or during a specific period of time. And then on the other hand, an occupational disease would occur gradually over a long period of employment. So under this analysis, it's arguable that a COVID-19 claim could be either an accident or an occupational disease, but it's probably more likely that it would be treated as an industrial accident. So the exposure would be deemed an unexpected mishap at work that resulted in injury. And even if it couldn't be pinned down to a definite time or date, it could probably be pinned down to a particular period of time. So on the other side of the argument, Justice Durant and Justice Durham argued that the terms injury and disease should be given ordinary meanings. So they argue that the legislature intentionally intended to drop non-disease conditions from its definition of occupational disease when it got rid of those 27 different conditions in the current version of the Act. And they also rely on decisions from other jurisdictions. So in Illinois, for example, the Supreme Court distinguished between injury and disease by stating that injury is caused by an identifiable trauma or physical occurrence, whereas a disease stems from something that is neither traumatic nor physical. So Justice Durant and Justice Durham argue that an injury should be interpreted as a condition that arises from physical trauma. And on the other hand, a disease should be interpreted as a condition that arises from some other source, like an environmental hazard, an infectious agent, which virus is specifically included there, or a biological or genetic defect. So while WCF's initial thought was toward adjusting COVID-19 claims as occupational diseases, the Utah legislature then complicated that when it passed House Bill 3007. So House Bill 3007 is the presumption for first responders. This new law acknowledges that certain workers are likely to be exposed to COVID-19 more frequently than the general population. So for these workers, exposure to communicable disease during a pandemic is a unique condition of their employment. But there's a few things to note here. So first, the legislature codified the first responder presumption as Part 11 to the Workers' Compensation Act instead of including it under the Occupational Disease Act. The act then defines COVID-19 as a disease. However, the act then provides that a first responder who claims to have contracted COVID-19 during the performances of his duties as a first responder is presumed to have contracted COVID-19 by accident during the course of performing his work duties. So at least for first responders, it appears that the legislature intended to include COVID-19 in the Workers' Compensation Act, which would potentially eliminate any apportionment defense that we would have. A few other things about House Bill 3007. So first responder is broadly defined pursuant to the Federal Family First Coronavirus Act. So it's broader than in other provisions of our Workers' Compensation Act. It includes anyone who provides transport, care, healthcare, comfort, or nutrition to coronavirus patients or others in response to COVID-19. So very broad. It includes all first responders, including military, law enforcement, correctional officers, firefighters, EMTs, paramedics, public health personnel, 911 operators, child welfare workers, public works personnel. It also includes any person employed by a healthcare provider. So this includes anyone employed at a clinic, doctor's office, hospital, lab, pharmacy, nursing home, and even medical schools are included in that definition. The first responder is not always entitled to the presumption. They must first have an actual diagnosis of COVID-19 before their claim is to be covered. And proof of diagnosis requires the person to provide us with laboratory testing that shows a positive lab result and diagnosis by a physician. So both are required. If a first responder refuses timely examination or testing, they're not entitled to the presumption. And then even if the first responder complies with the examination and testing and is diagnosed with COVID-19, the presumption can be rebutted by a preponderance of the evidence. So how is WCF responding to our COVID-19 claims? We really are looking at these on a case-by-case basis. So WCF is carefully considering every claim that comes in, and that includes the claims from our first responders and the claims from our other workers. WCF is conducting a thorough investigation as to the facts and state of the disease at the time and place of each alleged exposure. So we rely on medical evidence, including lab testing and medical treatment notes, as well as the most up-to-date epidemiological evidence that we have. And this is just some of the information that we would normally gather when we're looking at whether there's any evidence to rebut the presumption or whether a claim should be accepted. So has the claimant tested positive for COVID-19? If so, when? The timeline is going to be really important because based on the incubation period, the timing of the potential exposure at work and when they were actually diagnosed is going to be key for our medical experts to look at. Does the claimant have symptoms? And again, what was the time frame for the onset of those symptoms? Who has been in close contact with the claimant in the 14 days leading up to the date of the first symptoms and since, and close contact is within 6 feet. That seems to be the standard that everyone has been using. And then did the claimant have direct contact with infectious secretions of a COVID-19 case? So that sounds gross, but it's where you coughed on or sneezed on by somebody that had COVID-19. Was the claimant notified they were potentially exposed to a person who tested positive for COVID-19? And if so, how close of contact did the claimant have with that person? Was the claimant in the same indoor environment as a case for a prolonged period but did not meet the definition of close contact? Was the claimant at a large gathering at the same time as a COVID-19 confirmed case? Did the claimant or someone in close contact with the claimant travel in the past 14 days? And if so, what was the mode of travel and where did they go? Did a person participate in a large group gathering of greater than 10 people in an area with confirmed cases of community spread? And then what is the time frame for the potential an industrial exposure. Is this just they're claiming that there was an outbreak at work, or is this something that's really known, like they went out and responded to a COVID-19 patient's claim on an emergency basis? So this kind of covers where WCF is on part one of its policy. The other thing that we need to consider is part two of our policy. So I'm just going to jump over to that for a minute. So part two of our policy provides coverage for civil damages against an employer. This insurance is not intended to take the place of other liability insurance, like commercial general liability. So it applies in pretty limited circumstances. Just like with part one of our policy, part two provides that the insurance applies to bodily injury by accident or bodily injury by disease. Injury by disease must be caused or aggravated by the conditions of employment. It's almost the same language here in subsection four as was in the other policy. So this insurance requires, and this is down here in part B, it requires us to pay sums the employer legally must pay as damages because of bodily injury to an employee. And this includes damages the employer is liable to a third party by reason of a claim or suit against the employer by that third party to recover damages claimed against the third party. The language is a little confusing, but this is the circumstance that many of us are familiar with in the context of construction cases. So an employee of a subcontractor sometimes sues the general contractor for premises liability or some other theory of liability. The general contractor would then bring a third party complaint against the subcontractor employer. So we also have to pay for care and loss of services. But in Utah, that application of that subsection is going to be very limited. In other states that don't have as broad of an exclusive remedy as Utah, this is sometimes interpreted as covering loss of consortium claims. And then in subsection four, we cover bodily injury to your employee that arises out of and in the course of employment claimed against you in a capacity other than as an employer. Again, in Utah, this is going to have very limited application because of our exclusive remedy clause, but in other states, you can sometimes sue an employer as like the owner of a premise or the driver of a vehicle or in some additional capacity other than just their capacity as an employer. Of most interest to us here, though, is this subsection three, and that requires us to compensate a family member for consequential injury they suffer as a result of injury to an employee. We haven't had to deal with this at WCF yet, but this has been a concern that as we start seeing COVID-19 claims come in from first responders, that we are going to see claims that the first responder brought coronavirus to a spouse or a child at home. So there are at least two civil lawsuits I'm aware of that relate to an employee contracting COVID-19 at work and that would raise a potential of coverage, at least a duty to defend under part two. So the first case I have here is a Walmart case, and I think this was the first case filed against an employer in relation to COVID-19. This case arose after a Walmart employee died after contracting COVID-19. And the allegations of the complaint largely are negligence. The family claimed Walmart owed a duty to exercise reasonable care to its employees. It was filed in Illinois, and I'm not certain what their exclusive remedy provision states. This type of case would probably not survive in Utah, where we have a really broad exclusive remedy provision. But WCF would likely defend the employer's interests under Part 2 of our policy with a reservation of rights. The second case is a Utah case that was recently filed against a company called Built Bar. We don't insure Built Bar, and I don't really have any information regarding the allegations raised by the plaintiffs other than what I pulled from the complaint and the news articles. But the complaint was filed on behalf of an employee, the employee's disabled daughter, and the employee's roommate. So the complaint alleges that Built Bar refused to provide employees with personal protective equipment, that they refused to sanitize workspaces, and then that they threatened to fire employees who raised safety concerns. The complaint alleges that an employee contracted COVID-19 at Built Bar and then brought the disease home to her daughter and her roommate, who also contracted the disease. The complaint alleges negligence, but it also alleges intentional causes of action. So specifically, they allege negligence, willful misconduct, reckless infliction of harm, and gross negligence. Again, we would defend the employer likely under part two of our policy. The daughter in this scenario would have the stronger claim for coverage under our policy because her claim would fit squarely within the type of damages that our policy enumerates as something that we may be liable to pay. There are challenges to these types of lawsuits. I don't think that they would be particularly easy for these plaintiffs to prevail on. So Utah introduced and passed Senate Bill 3007, and this provides civil immunity for COVID-19. The law provides a person is immune from civil liability where an individual is exposed to COVID-19 on premises owned or operated by the person or during an activity managed by the person. The law doesn't apply to willful, reckless, and intentional conduct. So the case against Built Bar would probably survive like a motion to dismiss based on the way that complaint was pled. But the other challenge with any civil lawsuit is always our exclusive remedy provision, which I've brought up multiple times here, but it provides the right, for a worker to recover under the Workers' Compensation Act is their exclusive remedy against their employer. It provides civil immunity to an employer for any claim that arises out of the employee's work accident or injury. And that includes claims that are brought by family members and other people. So the exclusive remedy exempts only intentional conduct. So you would have to plead a specific intentional behavior, I guess, in order to get around this exclusive remedy. And it's very difficult to get around the exclusive remedy in the state of Utah. There are some other implications that have come up for insurers with respect to COVID-19. One of the issues that has come up in the claims process is the conflict between our obligation to pay compensation to an injured worker and the federal Paycheck Protection Program. So if an injured worker is unable to work due to a disability, WCF would be liable to cover their wages. But under the Paycheck Protection Program, employers receive loans and then qualify for loan forgiveness if they continue to pay employees who are unable to work due to COVID-19. So if we pay TTD, it could have some negative effects here. So it could either result in the employer being disqualified from loan forgiveness, or it could result in the employee being compensated twice. There's similar issues that arise with respect to some of the other programs, like the expanded state unemployment with the federal enhancement. So an injured worker may, in fact, prefer to seek unemployment because they would receive more money through that system than through the workers' compensation system. So this is something that's come up and that we've had to figure out ways to deal with these things so that we're not harming our policyholders and our employers in these situations. Another issue that's come up is the impact of COVID-19 on non-COVID-19 claims. So oftentimes a person may be injured by accident in their employment and still be in need of medical treatment. So although the person has not reached what we call maximum medical improvement, they can be released to go back to their regular job. And once they are released to work, we no longer have any obligation to pay compensation so long as their job is available to them. So some issues have arisen with respect to people who have not reached medical stability and are then laid off or furloughed because of COVID-19, or if the employer is just not operating. So if they have not reached medical stability and they have no job, we have liability to pay wages and compensation that we would not ordinarily need to pay. The workers' compensation industry has also been impacted with respect to premiums. And this isn't unique to the workers' compensation industry. Other insurers are also dealing with these things. But the National Council on Compensation Insurance filed a rule change that excludes claims that are attributable to COVID-19 from their experience rating calculations. So the NCCI is saying that we can't use claims that relate to COVID-19 to adjust premiums for next year. The NCC also put out guidance for reclassifying employees who are no longer working in their past positions in order to help policyholders financially. So they're allowing, even if we've already audited the employer and figured out what their premium should be, they're allowing us to now adjust that premium. The Utah Insurance Department followed suit, and they have issued several bulletins that encourage adjustments for employers. So Bulletin 2020-3 allows for insurance carriers to suspend premiums, premium payments for employers who are closed but are still paying their employees. So our premiums are based in part on payroll, and there is really no risk of injury where employees are not working. So they're allowing us to suspend premium payments where that makes sense. And then Bulletin 2020-4 encourages insurers to reclassify employees and adjust premiums based on reduced payrolls or changes in job function. So if an employee, for example, is normally an employee that would work on a sales floor, but they're now at home taking customer service calls, this allows the insurer to reclassify that employee either as a clerical employee or a telecommuting employee to help the employer out with their insurance premium. So WCF has taken a number of steps to help businesses who are having financial issues. We implemented a short-term policy to exclude from premium factors employees who are at, who are not working and still receiving payroll. And if an employee is working from home, we are allowing our employers to reclassify those employees under the bulletin as telecommuting or clerical employees for purposes of adjusting their premiums. So I did not provide a copy of my slides, but I'm happy to do that if anybody is interested in having that information. But I did have asked Michelle to send out some of the resources that WCF has relied on in working through some of these issues. So I provided a COVID-19 Q&A page from the National Council on Compensation Insurance, as well as there's kind of state-by-state breakdown of the various regulations and laws that have been passed by different states in response to the coronavirus. I included a similar summary from the American Property Casualty Insurance Association. The full text of the two bills that I referenced that were passed by the Utah legislature and WCF's public COVID-19 guidance. These resources and guidance can also be found online, and I've included the websites here. And I am kind of to the end of my information. I talked a lot faster than I thought I would. But I know, again, that this presentation may have raised more questions than answers. And that it's difficult to iron out all the legal and claims issues that can arise out of COVID-19 because there isn't really anything comparable to look at. So this is meant more to kind of give you an idea of some of the issues that have come up for us and some of the things that we've had to deal with during this time. And I haven't been able to see the chat box, Michelle. So
okay, so I can see the chat box now, and we don't have any chats right now, but if any of you have any questions and would like to, you can either unmute yourself and ask Kaylee, or you're welcome to type your question into the Zoom group chat box. It's at the bottom. It just says chat. And if you click on it down at the bottom, you can type your message, and when you press enter, it will show up for everyone to see. And you're welcome to ask any questions that you need of Haley. And then also in that chat box, if you did not get the resources that I sent out this morning, I thought I got everybody on the list that was registered. But if you didn't, if you'll enter your email on the chat box, I'll shoot you a copy of those right now. So if there are any questions, go ahead and unmute yourself or enter in the chat box now.
I welcome my workers' compensation friends to correct me or add anything if you want to as well.
Great, and I'm not getting anyone on the chat yet. I'll just test it to see if it's working. Oh, there's one now. Do you see them, Haley? Do they show up for you?
Yeah. So the definition of a healthcare provider is really broad, and I can't remember if dentist is specifically included in that, but it's basically any person that works for a healthcare provider. And I think that it's likely that that would be covered as a first responder under this COVID-19 specific regulation. Sorry for people that maybe can't see the text. It's our dentists included as healthcare providers. And again, this definition under the federal act is so broad that I think it probably would include dentists, though I'm not remembering for sure whether that was one of the specific occupations that's listed. Great. Well, I guess I'm gonna let everyone get out of the CLE 15 minutes early. So if you have any questions.
So I've got a question.
Okay.
This is Powers. Are you actively encouraging WCF customers to reach out to WCF and reclassify employees that have been working for home for months to get a refund or?
Yeah, so we are actually trying to actively help our policyholders. And so we have sent them written correspondence with our guidelines, which are from the Utah bulletins about when they can reclassify their employees. So that's been sent out to all of them, and we're encouraging them to reach out to our underwriting team if that is applicable to them so that they can have their premiums adjusted.
There's no obligation to do that though, correct?
No, I wouldn't think that there's any. The bulletins are more advisory in nature. So in fact, the premium holiday bulletin basically says it's not illegal for you to give them a premium holiday, but they don't in any way require that. So it's advisory in nature only.
Okay. I was just asking because if an insurer contacts me and said, hey, we issue insurance policies for workers' compensation, but nobody's working, do I have to give them a refund? I think the answer is you can, but you don't have to.
Yeah. And the best thing to look at as far as that's concerned is the NCCI guidelines, because that is what's going to be followed probably by states throughout the nation. So our Utah bulletins are going to be specific to this state, but the NCCI generally governs workers' compensation policies everywhere. And so the NCCI guidelines is probably what most multi-state insurers are looking at when they're making those kinds of decisions. Anything else?
I don't see anything else in the chat group. If there's any other questions, please feel free to jump in and unmute yourself. We'll just give you a couple more minutes, and then if not, I've got all your names down and I will send you a CLE certificate and I'll resend out the materials that Haley provided, and then you'll have those to reference, and then I'll be making an application to the Utah State Bar today. Haley, why don't you send me your PowerPoint, and then I'll send that along with the other document you gave me, the other PDF, and I'll send that out to everybody along with their CLE certificate for today's CLE.
All right. Okay, so just to correct my earlier statement, I mentioned that there's some other people from my office here online with me, and we actually have a COVID committee here at WCF, and so if you have other questions and need some guidance, if I can't answer the questions. Luckily, we have really great resources here in-house to help me with that. But one of our other attorneys just let me know that dentists are not listed in the definition referenced under the federal statute. So the federal statute is CFR section 826.3 subsection C, and it has a very long list of a bunch of medical providers, and so apparently dentists are not listed under that section. Thank you, JD.
Okay, I'll just give it another couple seconds in case there's one more question or anybody has anything to add in the chat. Thanks so much, everyone, for attending. We appreciate Haley doing this for us. We reached out to her just a couple of weeks ago and told her we thought this would be a pertinent information and a good CLE for everyone at this, you know, obviously weird time. And we appreciate all of our members, and some of you are not yet members of UDLA, so thanks for joining us. And we have another CLE next month, in case you're interested. It's going to be a civility and professionalism CLE. It should be entertaining. And also, I know everybody needs that hour for their reporting that's, I believe, due in September now. So join us next month in June. I believe it's on the 19th, and I can send that information out later. But if there's not any more questions, I think we can go ahead and end the meeting. Thanks so much, Haley. It was really informative. We appreciate you doing this for us.
No problem. Thanks, everyone. Nice to see some faces.
A couple of us. Most everyone's like closes their videos.
All right. See you later.
Thanks so much. Take care. Thanks, Haley.